When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I got stuff for you.
Holy moly.
I need to get some snakes and release them around my house.
But I love eating people. I love eating kids.
These guys are the scientists of the supernatural, lecturers leaving lessons for inquiring laymen. They are applying the scientific method to a world that baffles science. They are the cryptids of the corn.
Every day that you open your mouth,
I know, right?
I'm more convinced that you're abducted by aliens.
No.
And it just stood up. I mean, it just like kept going and going. And she goes, what the?
These are idiots.
I was laughing reading this because I already knew how you would feel.
Idiot. What part of the story fits your balloon?
Well,
this isn't a UFO. Yeah.
But who else has big black wings and red eyes?
Batman.
Oh, Mothman.
Oh, yeah, Mothman.
Well, everyone, I think we know exactly what it is. So say it all with me. It was the Sandhill Crane.
Would you try it?
No.
You wouldn't eat it?
No.
Why?
Because they're probably toxic.
There'd be a lot of poop in my pants. Seeing a 6-foot alligator go swinging through the air and slam into a tree.
And welcome back to Cryptids of the Corn podcast. I am your host, sans Mr. E today. Just JClone27 here with you. And today I'm joined by a special guest. But before I get to that, Mr. E and I are just launched our Kickstarter, which you should already be aware because I'm not sure when this episode will be airing. But we are going to rediscover the Trinity's Alps giant salamander in 2025. That's the goal anyways. So check the links below in the description of this episode, and you will find the link to our Kickstarter. We've got the best team to rediscover this animal, in my opinion, that's ever been assembled. And I'm confident we're going to rediscover this thing. Join our Patreon show, our Patreon channel. Join our member space on cryptsofthecorn.com. You can get all the extra stuff there. We post new things every week. Check out our Friday show, Freaky Fauna Friday, on our separate channel, also in the links below. But all right, let's get all that out of the way. And I'm joined today by a special guest of a ghost enthusiast, an Appalachian cryptid herself, and a fellow weird kid. I'm joined today by my good friend, Jesse. Say hello, Jesse.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. I re-upped myself on my ghost stories, so.
Oh, good. Because I know people on this, our listeners to the show, love a good ghost story or two.
I love a good ghost story.
Oh, absolutely. And we share something in common. We're both bartenders.
We are. It's how we met. So
yes, it's how we're introduced to each other. So, and now we're here doing the show. So what are you going to talk to us about today?
Okay, so Jay and I got into a conversation about this not long ago, about how pretty much if you live in Appalachia, ghosts are like part of your raising. They're part of the culture. And I grew up listening to ghost stories and reading ghost stories. So the ones that I told them about are from Kentucky, actually. I'm not from Kentucky. Ghost stories are from Kentucky. And he really liked them. Mm-hmm. So here I am.
Now, I can vaguely remember some of the one story, that's for sure. But I remember I enjoyed it because I may have been a little inebriated when I spoke to you. But it was very entertaining. I remember that
just
much.
A little.
And are you going to, which one are you going to introduce first?
Okay, so I'm going to go with the shorter one first.
Okay.
And it's about cursed objects.
Ooh, okay.
Which is like one of my favorite subjects. Love a good cursed object.
Okay. So let's dive into it.
Okay. So I'm going to set the scene for you. Okay. It's 1938 and it's in Pulaski County, Kentucky. So up towards Somerset and all that. And so 1938, this man comes home from work and his name's Carl Pruitt. And he came home to exactly what every man doesn't want to come home to. And he found his wife kind of, you know, romping around with somebody else.
Oh, no.
I know. So screams ensued, you know, big fight starts. Other guy jumps out the window. And in an absolute fit of rage, Carl Pruitt grabs a piece of chain off of a nearby table and strangles his wife to death. Oh,
okay. That's not good.
So
that's not good at all.
No, murder's never good, you know? So
no.
After that, he's standing there looking at his wife's body, realizes, you know, oh, I've just done this. I didn't mean to. So he just unalives himself. So big old murder suicide in Pulaski County.
Okay.
Okay. So of course, like their families didn't want them buried together.
Right.
Her family was furious. Yeah. So they got buried in different cemeteries. So as people are visiting this cemetery, they start noticing this discoloration on his gravestone. And after a few weeks, it's a chain.
Like the chain appears on the gravestone? Or
yes,
a discoloration
like
in the
in
shape
moss.
Of...
It's basically just like a natural discoloration, but in the perfect shape of a chain crossed.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah. So, of course, like, you know, Southern people were like, oh, no, that's definitely supernatural. So, kind of this legend got built around it. So, it was just a few months later, and, you know, it's 1938, and there's these young boys, and they're just riding their bikes all over town because they didn't have streetlight rules back then.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're talking about, you know, this murder-suicide as they're riding past this grave, and one little boy, because you know how little boys are, they're like, well, I'm not scared of any kind of ghost. So he starts throwing rocks, big old rocks, at this guy's tombstone.
Okay.
And he chips it. In several places, you know, the other boys are like, I can't believe you just chipped that grave. We're going to get in so much trouble. So they start heading off home thinking, you know, how much trouble that they're going to be for destroying this gravestone pretty much. And as they're going home, this little boy is picking up speed on his bike. And then he's picking up more speed, and the other boys are telling him to slow down until he basically loses control of this bike. And crashes it into a tree. So, you know, real bad bike wreck. Everybody's had those. But somehow, the bike chain came off. And it became wrapped around this little boy's throat.
Oh.
So, this little boy was strangled to death by his own bike chain after assaulting this gravestone.
With of the man that murdered
yes,
his wife.
Yes, of the man that had strangled his wife with a chain. So
you
of
can,
course.
Can you say that this was a chain reaction?
Oh my gosh. You're going to say that a lot. Okay.
I should have played
but
the
yes,
drums
it was,
and the cymbal.
It was kind of like a chain reaction. So, you know, this is about a month later. And of course, you know, word gets around, the small town word gets around, like, hey, did you hear what happened to this little boy? Da, da, da. So this is about a month later, and his mom, not his wife, goodness, it's Kentucky, but not that kind of Kentucky. So this little boy's mom is just grief stricken, and she's hearing about how, you know, the ghost of this man must have done something to her son, and she is just enraged. Mm-hmm. So she takes a hand axe.
Oh, no.
And she goes to this gravestone, and she's just screaming and crying and chipping at this gravestone until she looks down, and it is just in pieces at her feet.
Okay.
Right. So she feels a little bit better, you know, after she had her little mental breakdown, can relate. She goes home, and the next day she's, you know, back to regularly scheduled programming, and she's doing her laundry. She's hanging everybody's clothes up on the clothesline outside, and she trips. And she's, you know, she kind of trips a little bit, and she's trying to get herself back up. She ends up with this clothesline wrapped around her neck.
Ooh. So another strangulation, but this time it wasn't a chain.
Actually, okay, so I was getting there.
Oh, no.
So apparently, poor families used to use, like, just whatever they could find as clotheslines. So it was a very small link chain that ended up wrapped around this woman's neck and strangled her to death.
Okay.
So the crazy thing about this is that whenever they went back to the cemetery, that gravestone looked like it hadn't been touched.
It was back together?
It was back together. Like, the chain was still on it. Everything's back to normal, except for, you know, this woman got strangled with a chain. So, mm-hmm. Crazy, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, now there's even more rumors. This is like legend status now. You know, this guy had strangled one person while he was alive, and now two
while he's
after
dead.
His death.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so this legend, you know, is developing and stuff like that. And it's about another month. And this farmer's just driving past this cemetery, and they got to talking about this legend, because that's what it is at this point.
Right.
And he's in a wagon, and he's got like three of his family members with him, and he's telling him about this, and I think he might have been hitting the shine a little bit. Because he just says that he doesn't believe in ghosts, and he doesn't believe in superstition, and he's not scared of nothing. So he takes out his revolver, and he shoots up this gravestone.
So he goes back to the haunted gravestone and shoots
it. Yeah. So he just, you know, they were riding by, and he starts talking about it and gets himself mad and decides to just shoot this gravestone. Okay. Right? So they're going down the road, and his family's like, you know, I can't believe you've just done that. That's crazy. And the horses get spooked. So the horses just start going. And he's trying to control it, and the family realizes, like, this wagon is off the rails right now. Like, it's going to crash for sure. So his family jumps out, and he's trying to save his wagon. So he's like pulling at the reins and stuff. And as they go around a curve, the wagon crashes into a tree. And somehow in this crash, this man ends up in front of the wagon. And the chain that was connecting the horses to the wagon became wrapped around his throat and killed him.
Jeez. Now, this is either the craziest string of coincidences I've ever heard of, or there definitely is something very supernatural going on.
Very, very. Now you can call it a chain reaction, because now it's been, you know.
And
so after this, everybody is freaking out. They're writing the congressman. They're, you know, going to the police, and they're like, what are we going to do? Like, you can't arrest a ghost, but, like, just go and investigate this. So these two police officers end up getting sent to this cemetery. and they're looking for the gravestone, and they find it completely unshot, in pristine condition. And, you know, as people do, one of them just starts laughing, and he's like, I can't believe that they've sent us out here. Like, we're police officers, and they have sent us out here to investigate a gravestone for a killer ghost. So he's just making fun of the whole situation. He thinks that it is hilarious.
Yeah.
Okay. And so they end up, you know, they take some photos of the gravestone, and then they're leaving. And the skeptical one is driving, and then the other one is in the passenger seat. So they start going, and this guy sees what he thinks are headlights in the rearview mirror. Okay, so he looks back and he realizes that's not headlights. He just sees this big, huge, scary ball of light, and it's moving towards the car. At this point, this man is no longer a skeptic. He is like, I am getting out of here. We got to go. And the faster that he drives, the more that this thing is chasing after him. So he is just barreling down this road. And the other police officer is like, slow down. What are you doing? Unclear whether he could see the light or not. Don't know. But he is terrified until they end up crashing. Okay, so this is not a bike, not a wagon, anything like that. So there shouldn't be a chain, right?
Right, it's a police car.
Right, wrong. So they crash between two posts on the side of the road. And, you know, the passenger, he kind of gets tossed out of the car, and he's beat up pretty bad, you know, bleeding, got some bruises. And he stands up and goes to walk to the car to check on the other guy, and he just stops in abject horror. What he sees is between these two posts that they've crashed into was a chain that went through the windshield, shattered the windshield, and this man's head was nearly severed by a chain that should not have been there.
Yeah, like clotheslined by it.
Yeah, so they're actually the only ones that didn't destroy the headstone. They were just kind of making fun of it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was pretty terrifying. And this legend has now just surpassed legendary, right?
It's spread like chainmail.
Pretty much. So everybody's like, all right, screw this. We're not going back to this cemetery ever again. So the families of, like, these superstitious families of people that had their family buried in this very small burial plot that this is all happening in, decide to exhume the bodies and have them buried in other locations.
Okay.
So what was once, like, you know, a normal little graveyard, now just his one lone grave there.
Just the one guy?
So, they exhumed every other body.
Except the chain cursed headstone grave.
Yes. Yep. And so, they ended up, you know, exhuming all of the bodies. He's there by himself, and he doesn't have any family to care for his grave. So it ends up just becoming overgrown and abandoned. And then finally, in 1958, some kind of strip mining operation happens on the side of the burial plot, and his gravestone ends up being destroyed. Unclear whether or not anybody was murdered for that, but this graveyard is no longer there.
I was waiting for that. And, like, the guy got wrapped around the chain of his bulldozer somehow.
I was hoping. Oh, actually, okay.
I was hoping for another murder to occur.
Yeah, you know, as one does. Actually, I've skipped a part that I did not realize that I've skipped.
Oh.
So it was after the police, when everybody were avoiding the graveyard. So there was this man named Arthur Lewis, who I guess was friends with one of these officers, and was probably hitting that shine a little too hard. And tells him his wife, he's like, I'm so sick of people believing these superstitions. This is crazy. So he ended up taking a chisel and a hammer to this man's gravestone. And he's like, that's, I'm gonna get him. I'm gonna get this ghost. So the houses that are around this graveyard, they can hear this man just chiseling.
Yep.
And chiseling at this gravestone. Okay. And then they're thinking this guy's crazy until they hear a scream.
What do you do? Hit his thumb with a hammer?
No. Well, so all these men in the surrounding houses, they grab up their lanterns because it's the middle of the night, and they run out and they find him. Something had spooked this guy so much that he decided he had to get out of that graveyard right now. So he runs towards the entrance in the dark, forgetting that there's a chain holding the gates together.
Oh, no.
So, yeah, I added to it. So they found this guy basically hanging by a chain noose outside of this cemetery gate.
Wow.
And that's whenever they abandoned the cemetery, because when they went back, even though people for 15 minutes could hear this man just like chiseling on this grave and chiseling on this grave, there was not a mark on this headstone.
Yeah. So, in the case of this story, is the headstone the cursed object, or is it the initial chain?
So I think it's a little bit of both, because even like with the police officers, they made fun of the situation. Well, the one did.
Right.
But they didn't actually touch the gravestone. I think it's just the thing of like maybe desecrating like the story in some way.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure, but and I mean, it's the curse of Carl Pruitt's gravestone, and you'll never be able to find it again because it's destroyed.
It got leveled.
But I know that story really terrified me, because up until that point, I'm like, listen, ghosts are spooky, but they can't hurt you.
Right.
But they can.
Right. Well, in this case, it's not like a ghost pulled a chain out and, you know, strangled anybody, except maybe in the case that last one, that was a little sketchy. But for all the other ones, it's just kind of like a freak accident that just happened to end up with a chain, you know? But was the ghost the one that set up this scenario?
There was probably some ghostly manipulation there, though.
Exactly, yeah. Did the ghost or whatever spirit, even, you know, the fae folk or something, were they, are they responsible for, you know, setting up this, the circumstances for it to happen?
It was Puckwedgies.
Probably Puck. Don't mention their name. Are you crazy? No, it could have been.
Okay.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. I do it. I say no. It. I whistle in the woods. I don't care. Pretty soon.
Yeah, I told you distinctly not to whistle at night, and you started whistling, and here I am trying to like cover my phone speakers. I'm like, Jay, stop whistling.
I can't help it. There's always a tune in my head, and you know, whistling just, it gets it out.
Well, there's always a tune in my head too, but the tune in my head at night is don't whistle, you'll get murdered.
I don't know. I feel protected. I feel safe. I don't know what it is. But
you just carry salt in your pockets.
Yeah, there we go. Ooh, speaking of salt, do you like garlic? Because if you do, if you like garlic powder, our sponsor today is brought to us by Flavors of the Forest, Bigfoot Breath. They produce a raw garlic powder or raw garlic dust. It's garlic powder and a pinch of pink Himalayan sea salt. It's 100% freeze-dried garlic clove. You can do the garlic test. You can hold this garlic powder up to the ones you buy at the store, and this one will be pure snow white, where the one at the store will be yellow. It's Flavors of the Forest, Bigfoot Breath. You can find it on flavorsforest.com. And if you click in the link below, you can get us a kickback. You can buy their garlic powder. They have normal and they have a spicy garlic powder, which it's not that spicy. It just has a little peppery flavor, just a little kick to it. But if you add garlic powder to anything, this is the premier garlic powder on the market right now, and they're brand new and they're awesome people. So I just wanted to get that ad in there. So back to the story. The chain thing, though, do you think it all started with the initial murder? Or do you think, did something, you know, him getting into an emotional fit and rage, you know, seeing his wife, you know, catching her in the act of cheating on him, or, you know, or however that went down. But with him being in such an emotional, heightened rage, you know, it can kind of attract a different kind of energies to you. Do you think whatever that, you know, him, the act of him strangling her or murdering her, is there any chance whatever this spirit was, you know, maybe this chain thing's been going on longer and it just attached himself to him in that emotional state and used him as the vessel to get the chain, you know, murder going? What if this has been going on, you know, in the past, and now it's just attached to the Mr. Pruitt because he was the one, you know, responsible for that initial murder, and then it attached itself maybe to his, you know, his grave, his body, or, you know, his, where he was laid to rest, and the cycle continued.
What do you? So it's funny that you mentioned that to me, because, like, I've said that I'm a paranormal nerd, but I'm a huge paranormal nerd. And I have not been able to find out what this gravestone was made of. But have you heard about, like, the stone tape theory?
Stoned ape or stone? Is that what you said?
Stone tape.
Oh,
theory.
Stone tape. No, I have not.
Okay. So basically, a lot of residual hauntings, like I'm talking about, like, non-intelligent things that happen at the same time every year or at the same mm-hmm. time every night, and it's just kind of like a replay
yes.
of things that have happened in the past. So there's a theory there, okay? They find that a lot of this stuff happens around granite because, hear me out, ghosties are made up of electromagnetic energy and geomagnetic energy. So granite basically traps in geomagnetic energy. Mm-hmm. And the reason that it's called a stone tape theory is because during moments of heightened emotion, so like murders, people coming in and finding their loved ones dead, like there's thousands of these cases that you can look up and find, that it basically, the, I guess, energy is so strong that it attaches itself to the closest thing that will absorb it, which happens to be granite.
Mm-hmm.
So I could see that. I don't know if his tombstone was made of granite, but I mean, if I was a betting lady, I'd probably bet on that.
Some type of granite, or maybe even quartz, or, you know, have quartz. And I think quartz is in granite too, right? Maybe. I don't know.
I don't know. I'm a ghost expert, not a rock expert.
Right. Yeah. No, I can believe that because I know, I think it's granite, or I might be thinking of quartz though, but I do believe there's quartz in granite. Like some quartz holds, like it's called like a piezoelectric quality, where when you squeeze it, like when you compress quartz, it actually sends, you know, it creates, I don't know if it's creates, I don't know, it discharges electricity. So, and we talked about on our show, me and Justin, or Mr. E, we talk about, he believes that ghosts aren't like spirits of, you know, the souls of people or human beings. But he thinks that there's a whole electromagnetic, biosphere, basically, that these creatures or these things, these entities could be just some form of life that lives in the electromagnetic, spectrum. And then
that's basically exactly how I feel about it too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he
is like,
we just don't think your spirits, you know, really get trapped here, but these things can will mimic and imitate in order to interact with you, because that's like the only way they can kind of do it, they, you know, without being so physical. But they can imitate the things that were here. Or, you know, we say that like a lot, like the EVPs, you know, electronic voice phenomena, but we call them, what was it, electronic, like voice parrots. Like they're just parroting things that have already been said, rather than it's someone like past relative trying to reach out and communicate.
Ooh, actually. So I was thinking about this last night. when my step grandma, who was very, very religious, mm-hmm. old Mama Kay, so she was of a very fervent belief that if you see a ghost of your loved one, that is not your loved one. She referred to them as demons, but pretty much she said that evil creatures will take on whatever form that they can to fool you.
100% believe that, yes.
So, I mean, and if an older Appalachian woman says something to you, like, you better listen to it.
I 100% agree with that as well.
So, you better listen. I get that. I get where you're coming from.
Is Mamaw K still around?
She is not, okay. Unfortunately. She's okay. Not.
Just thought I'd ask, because that would be one heck of a person to hear some stories from.
It really would, because she worked at the Historical Society for years.
Are you kidding me? So that would be the... Okay, I'm sure you've got some of her stories locked up, though, in your head, right?
I've got Mamaw Kay's stories. I've got my Mamaw Alice's story. She's the one. She's the reason that I got into ghosts, because, you know, she would tell me about driving down this old 25 highway road and seeing the ghost of my grandpa's dad, actually.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So they're my grandmother's, my ancestors. They're the reason that I do what I do.
Yeah. I mean, it all kind of adds up, you know? I mean, everything happens for a reason, right? We're influenced.
Absolutely.
Yep. I agree with that.
So speaking of, thing happens for a reason, right? How do we feel about time loops?
We talk about them on here. Like, when you say time loops, you mean like things that are reoccurring that are seen, or time itself, like we're living in one giant loop?
Okay, we're living in one giant loop, because the second story, if we have time for it, because that one's a little bit more in-depth, the one that you liked, it's centers around basically time hopping.
Okay. If I've got time, if you've got time.
I've got a little bit of time. I know that you're going to go back and edit this and take out the unimportant parts and me vaping and all that, so.
Yeah. I've got time. Let's go for it.
Okay. So this is the one, right? This is the one that I remember my sister reading to me that, like, basically was my intro into, like, Glitch in the Matrix. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. So.
Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing some more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she's decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over the 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. My dog Grace loves it. She just gobbles it up. Go check out Badlands Ranch. You can get there at badlandsranch.com/corncrew and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular priced order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/corncrew today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Devil's Hollow. is basically like the name of this story. So I'm going to set the scene for you again.
Okay.
Okay. So it's 1961. And these two men are going to college at Lexington. And they decide, like, hey, it's summer break. Let's go and actually do some exploring. Let's do some real serious, like, camping and fishing. So they head out to Eastern Kentucky. And after about 3 hours, you know, they pull up to this service station in this town called Hypen. And they go in and they're making conversation, you know, as people do. And they're telling these people that are in here, there's like a state trooper and a sheriff's deputy and some old men just sitting around gossiping, you know, just typical Southern stuff, right? And they're like, well, where can we go to get the best fishing? And they're all throwing out their own recommendations. And then one guy steps up and he says, listen, these men have never caught a big fish in their life. What you're going to do is you're going to go down County Road 28 and you're going to take it through this gap. And after you come through this gap and this crest in the mountains, then you're going to turn right onto this gravel road and go down to Devil's Hollow, down to Middle Fork. And that's where you're going to get your good fish. Okay. So they talk for a little bit. They fill up their like new lovely yellow Jeep with gas and get some bait and some snacks. And they just head out. And they're really excited. And they're talking on the way down about how they're going to, you know, catch all these big fish. And when they get up towards this gap in the mountains, and we've talked about this too, there's just like a patch of fog that's really out of place. Like, you know, everything's bright and the sun's kind of starting to go down, but everything's clear and there's just this patch of fog. But, I mean, they don't really have a choice, so they just drive through it.
Okay.
And it vanishes. Like, it was never there in the first place. So, they start heading and they're like, man, this kind of looks a little bit different than it did before we went through that fog. Like, you know, it's really bright and it's clear and there's all these trees and it doesn't look like anybody's ever been here. It basically looks like uninhabited land. So they're like thinking we might be lost. So they pull over on the side of the road, get out their map. And one of them, James Taylor, he turns to his buddy there. His name is Charles Davis. So he's like, hey, it's kind of like we're in the right place, but we're not, because this stream is a lot bigger than it should be. And this road that we're on right now, like, it doesn't exist on this map.
Hmm.
And so they're looking around and they see this big log building just kind of down the valley. And they're like, all right, well, let's go ask some humans what's going on. Make sure we're not lost. We're just trying to go get some fish. So they pull up to this log cabin and there's all these men standing outside, and at first they're like, did we stumble onto like a movie set? Because all these men are like dressed in just overalls and they have these big old beards and they're looking at these guys like, what in the world? And they're looking around like, well, we don't see any cameras or anything. Maybe this is just a really intuitive like old country store. So because, I mean, what else would you think? So they get out, and this big guy comes down the stairs, and he's like, what are you doing on my land, and why aren't there horses for your wagon? Mm-hmm. And these guys are just like, what's going on? So the guys come up, and they introduce themselves, and they're like, well, we came down here to do some hunting and fishing, you know, just camp a little bit, and we think we got lost. And this guy says, well, I'm, you know, Devil Joe Callahan, and you're on my land, and I don't like strangers. So you need to tell me why you're here. So now these guys are getting scared.
Yeah.
And they're like, and then he says, you're not Deaton's, are you? And they're like, what? No, like, we just told you our last names. And he's like, okay, because I plan to kill every damn Deaton that's ever lived. So,
yeah, I'm definitely not one
these
of them.
These guys are like, these people are hitting this moonshine hard, but they don't know what's going on. So they're like, all right. So this guy tells him, you know, just keep your hands where I can see them and come on over here to the fire pit and we're going to figure this out. So they're just, you know, hands up, terrified, two little college kids, and they go, they sit down with this guy and they're like, what's going on here? Like, is this like a country store? Like, it's really weird that you're wearing those clothes in 1961. And this guy just looks at them like they're nuts.
Yeah.
And he says, I don't know what's wrong with you boys, but it's 1879.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So they're like, everybody's confused. Nobody knows what's going on. And they explain to this man, like, you know, we went through this patch of fog, we're going down here to go camping. And this guy's like, that doesn't make any sense whatsoever. I've never seen nobody in the clothes that you're wearing. I've never seen that weird wagon thing that y'all are driving.
Yeah.
But you must be here for a reason. So we'll just figure stuff out. So he brings out some moonshine.
There you
and,
go.
Yeah. So they're sitting and they're just chilling and vibing, even though they're clearly from different time periods. And he's telling them about, you know, well, the reason that I believe you is because I've seen some real crazy stuff. And he's talking about fighting in the Confederacy and them seeing these Yankee soldiers that were dressed kind of weird and had these three-pointed hats. And they went to go charge them and they ran right through them.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, so he's seen some stuff and he's talking about these families that he's seen up on the mountains that one day the cabin was there and then the next they were just gone. There was no evidence of a cabin. There was no evidence of anything. So yeah. Something weird is happening in this holler, right?
Right.
So this guy's like, I'm a real private person, but I'm going to tell you why I thought you might be Deaton's. So he goes on and it's like a real life Hatfield and McCoy's kind of thing. Okay. So this family lived across the river and they were the Deaton clan. And so the Callahans and the Deatons would help each other out all the time.
Okay.
And then one day, something happened where the Deatons needed a canoe and the river was flooding and the Callahans wouldn't bring it over. So that ended up turning into basically a war where some of his sons were walking down the road and three or four of these Deaton boys came out and just whooped them. Right there. Like, I mean, beat them to a pulp.
Yep.
And then it got a little bit more serious to where, you know, they were fighting a little bit back and forth. And then the Deaton family ended up in a shootout with them. So they killed two of the Deatons. And then the Deatons took three of Devil Joe Callahan's sons and tied them to trees and shot them like dogs.
Jeez.
So right there and then, Devil Joe Callahan decides, I'm going to kill every Deaton that's ever lived. And
right. Well, that's how this makes sense now. Huh. Okay. So this, I've gotten a theory or at least a thought. This just, I just made me think of where it was. You say this was in outside of Lexington. Right.
No, so it was east of Lexington, like a few hours east.
Oh, okay, but still Kentucky.
Yeah. Yeah, so these guys had drove from Lexington
to
go camping and then ended up somehow in what is apparently now 1879.
Right.
With this huge family, there's like a bunch of sons and the mom and they're all just living together and camping and gardening and they've got pigs and all this stuff, so.
So here's my thought, why I believe this could be true. So obviously they went through some sort of time, I want to say like portal, but you know, they went into something that took them back in time. You know, if this, let's just say this story is 100% real and true. They went back in time and, you know, went in, I guess almost like it's like going through a bubble or something, you know, back to a different era. But did you know that, and we talked about it in the last story you shared, the quartz, or the, you know, quartz granite, but the quartz is the
important part. Did you know that one of the largest quartz deposits in the U.S. is in Kentucky?
Oh.
So I'm wondering if that played a factor, and maybe that's just where the energy, you know, I don't want to say discharged, but it's really that energy accumulated to make the conditions for a time loop, you know, thing to be possible or to occur, you know, and that's maybe what they drove through. Like it was a temporary portal or something that opened up that was just, and maybe why it was so foggy. That's the repercussions of one of those portals opening, or, you know, the side effect is having that fog effect. I don't have no idea, but that's what I'm going through it in my head. What do you think about
so
that?
It could be. You could be right. And especially since, you know, Devil Joe's telling him that, you know, he's seen other weird stuff. It could be Devil Joe, because he's talking about, you know, when he fought in the war, he was in Tennessee and he saw this big old metal bird flying overhead, and it had a trail of smoke behind it, and he's clearly seen an airplane.
Right.
Like the boys know, like, he's seen an airplane, but airplanes weren't a thing yet. So an
airplane with a chemtrail.
It could be. Yeah, definitely a chemtrail.
Right. So it's obviously a time thing.
And that's what's wrong with them Deetons, is the chemtrails.
Oh. They're the ones that started it, huh?
They are. Oh, it's shoot. For sure.
I might have to go after him now, too. But I don't advocate.
You might.
I don't advocate for murder. It's never the solution. Never.
Unless, I mean, I talk about murder a lot, but, like, I'd probably never do it.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Fair enough.
For the record, okay. I probably never. That's funny.
I mean, it is recorded. I'd definitely 100% never do anything like that.
Right.
Okay.
Is there more to the Devil's Hollow? Like,
oh yeah.
Okay.
Oh, 100%.
So when the guys came out, did they come out of the time loop, or did they come back to their normal time?
Okay, so we're getting there.
Okay.
So they, Devil Joe basically invites, he tells these guys, like, you know, I don't trust people, but there's something about you. So you can stay with us while we figure out what's going on. So for 10 days, James Taylor and Charles Davis just kind of hang out with them, and they learn all about the family and been learning how to hunt and fish and listening to Devil Joe's old war stories and all this.
Okay.
And so on the 10th day, James notices that Charles is getting pretty, like, despondent, pretty sad.
Okay.
And so he's like, you know, how are we going to get out of this? Like, we left to come here. It was 1961. Now we are apparently in 1897. You know, they've been real good to us, but there's no phones, there's no cars, no TV, no radio. Like, are we stuck here?
Man, what a dream. Like,
what's going to happen?
Right.
So James is trying to calm him down a little bit, and he's like, well, tonight, let's just, we're going to talk to the Callahans, and we're going to figure this out. So after dinner that night, they're all sitting around before bed and talking, because there's nothing else to do, because it's 1897. So they're talking, and Devil Joe's like, listen, I believe what you guys are telling me, but like, the things that you're telling me, like, you can talk in a box and people can hear you from miles away, like, that's crazy. If I wouldn't have seen the crazy stuff that I've seen, like, I would not believe this. But then he goes on to say that he and his wife a few years ago had seen this big metal bird shaped like a ball come down and land on the other side of the creek. And he said that these little old fellas in some shiny clothes come out and just start collecting rocks. And that his boys had ran over there with rifles. And he told them, you know, don't shoot them little fellas there. So now there's UFOs in this story.
That kind of sounds like the Hopkinsville goblins. with the shiny clothes, the little tiny, I want to say men, like maybe they're a hominid, they were bipedal at least. Do you know that story?
I've heard of it. I think that we talked about it, but not like in depth. Like, I'm not super familiar.
All right, but yeah, continue on.
Okay, so he's telling him all this crazy stuff, and James is like, wow, Devil's Hollow is really the place to be for like crazy stuff. And he's like, you know, those things are called UFOs. They're called unidentified flying objects. And they just go on and talk about like the weird stuff that they've seen.
Yeah.
And Devil Joe kind of looks around and he says, listen, I've just got this feeling, boys. It's been far too quiet these past 10 days. Like, I just feel like something's going to happen. So they're hanging out. And they start hearing bird calls. And they're like, well, we'll get ready to go to bed. And Devil Joe stops and he says, those aren't bird calls. He says, these are, you know, the Deetons. They're signaling each other like something's about to happen. We need to get in this house. We need to lock it up. So everybody gets in the house. They lock all the windows. You know, they're in this big protected log cabin and they're good. And he hands each of the boys a gun. And he says, if they've waited and let this build up, this is going to be something big. Like, they can't get any bullets past these logs, so they're going to have to do something else. So he tells his wife to take the kids and go into the back room and that the men are going to fight this out. So they start getting shot at. He's not worried because he's like, you know, nothing's going to get past these logs. Well, then they hear the sounds of a wagon. And he says, they're about to run a wagon through my house. Like, boys, you really, like, we have to get you out of here.
Yeah.
We've got to figure this out. So, for about an hour, you know, they're shooting. And then, all of a sudden, a burning wagon comes barreling down the hill, crashes through the cabin. Everybody's screaming. Devil Joe's boys are trying to, you know, shoot through the opening in the cabin, and everybody's getting shot. There's three of them that end up, you know, on the ground, and Devil Joe's like, all right, boys, just shoot. So James and Charles are absolutely terrified, and they're shooting out of this hole in the cabin, and then James looks over and sees Charles fall to the ground. So Charles has been hit in the head and in the chest.
Oh.
With rifle rounds.
Yeah.
So Devil Joe pretty much looks over and he says, boy, you need to get your friend and you need to put him in your weird horseless wagon and you need to get out of here. Like, I've seen some stuff and I'm not a religious man, but I know that you're going to get out of here somehow and that it's going to be really hard on you. But you're going to live for the next 10 years and nobody is going to believe that this has happened to you. So they end up, as he's watching just all these Callahans trying to escape the cabin and getting shot, he says, me and the boys are going to charge him and distract him and you run to your wagon. So he grabs his best friend Charles and he drags him. And as he's dragging him up the hill to his Jeep and throwing him in the Jeep, he can see all the people that he's hung out with for the past, you know, 10 days just falling. And then he sees, you know, Devil Joe standing there and, you know, there's a burning cabin behind him and he's just doing a rebel yell and screaming and shooting. And as he's pulling off, you know, just praying, like, if I start going down this road, please let me get back to 1961. Like, please let me get back.
Yeah.
He looks back, and as he looks back, he sees Devil Joe fall to the ground. And as he's falling, he screams, damn every Deaton who ever lived. So he is terrified. He doesn't know what's going on, and he's just booking it. And they get about to the point in the crest of the mountains, and he sees a patch of fog, and he is just like, oh, thank God. So it's dark, and he's booking it through there, and he sees headlights, and then he knows, he's like, oh my gosh, I'm saved. So this car pulls over, and he pulls over, and he sounds like a crazy person.
Yeah.
He's like, no, there ain't no way, like, that this has just happened to me. And the people who get out of the car are the police officers that were at the store. So James gets out of the car, and he's telling these police officers, he's like, listen, my friend's dead. I don't know what's going on. We've got to go back there. We've got to help the Callahans. They're getting killed right now. There's all these shots. They're burning down the cabin. We've got to go. And this officer is looking at him like, what in the world? And he says, listen, we just saw you a few hours ago, and now you come out of the road and you're screaming about, you know, there being a war. And
is his friend
like
still dead?
I'm sorry,
is his friend still dead in the Jeep with him?
Yes.
Okay.
So, and he's begging them to go back and help Devil Joe Callahan and his family. And this officer's like, listen, we saw you 3 hours ago. We told you to go camping, you know, and fishing right around this spot. And now you come back and your friend's dead and you're screaming about a family feud that happened 80 years ago. Like, what's wrong with you? And he's trying desperately to convince him. So they end up taking, one of the officers drives the Jeep to the coroner's office so Charles Davis's body can get examined.
Yeah.
The other one, James Taylor, they take him to the jail pretty much and call both sets of parents and, you know, have to deal with all of that. And it eventually, like, you know, it's going to trial. Like, this man came back with his friend shot dead in his Jeep. So there's like a whole trial.
Right.
And so somehow they have convinced these officers, like, to get a hold of a member of the Callahan family, because James Taylor said that he had a camera on him and that he took pictures of the Callahan family. Go get the film developed. Like, I'll prove this. And he's telling all these family stories, and they're like, wait, wait, wait. So they go and they get a member of the Callahan family that's like the historical expert.
Right.
You know? So he comes, and while they're waiting on those pictures to develop, he's talking to this guy, and one of the officers comes out and says, well, he had a pistol on him too. And he shows him the pistol, and the pistol has DJC carved into it.
Devil Joe Callahan.
But he also said, oh my God, I can't believe it. There was 11 notches on this pistol for each of the men that Devil Joe had killed. And when the officer gets back with these photographs, this Callahan family member is losing his mind because he can't believe he's got pictures of the family from 1897, but these are clear photos.
Yeah.
And as he's pointing, him and James Taylor are both like, oh, well, yeah, that's Joe's wife, Betty, and this is his son, Luke, and that's my great aunt Mina standing right there. Like, how did you get these photos? All, like, great aunt Mina was the last person to pass away, and she passed away in 1920.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way that you have all these photos. So, basically, he has physical evidence to prove where he was. And when it went to trial, you know, trials aren't really famous for siding with the supernatural. There's been a right. few trials involving the supernatural. So basically, they couldn't deem him not guilty. Like, they dismissed the evidence of the photos somehow. Don't ask me why. They've dismissed the evidence of the photos, and they've basically dismissed everything, and they don't really want to deem him guilty, but they don't have enough to say that he's not guilty.
Yeah.
So they deem him innocent on or guilty for basically insanity.
Okay.
So they sentence him to a mental institution. And he spends the next 10 years of his life.
Oh, geez.
In a mental institution, just begging everybody, like, please believe me. Like, this really happened. Like, I didn't kill my friend. This, I don't know what, how it happened, but this happened to me. Like, I swear.
Yeah.
And as he's there, you know, the cabin site's getting investigated and people are looking for, you know, historical artifacts around there. And buried, I think it's 6 inches in the ground, they find a 1959 class ring that says Charles Davis on it.
No way!
And they find a pocket knife buried just as deep towards the front of the cabin that says James Stephen Taylor.
Wow.
And on July 12th of 1971, 10 years after all this happened, James Taylor died in the mental institution.
Oh, that's sad. That's sad.
It is. It's heartbreaking.
They sent him there to die, basically.
Could you imagine going through something like that and knowing, like, I'm not going crazy because I brought stuff back with me. Like, what that would do to, like, your psyche?
Oh, yeah. It turned you all upside down.
Yeah, and just, like, even the other guy's family, like, you know, their son came back dead. And the only explanation is we went through a time loop and, you know, they're digging basically old, like, 61 caliber rifle bullets out of this guy, knowing that, you know, well, they don't make these bullets anymore, like, all this proof, but nobody, there's, you know, no way of knowing.
Right. That's insane. That's like, it basically is like a plot of a movie. I wouldn't be surprised if it's made into one or not, but it wouldn't shock me because that's an awesome story.
So, not that I know of, but, I mean, it was the longest story in, like, you know, that book, which was my favorite book when I was a kid. It's just crazy to me that, you know, it's kind of like the other supernatural trial that the Warrens did, the Devil Made Me Do It trial.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way to prove it. Definitely, but there's no way to disprove it. Right. So
they'll just send now you to a mental institution instead.
Yeah, like two perfectly healthy young men go on a camping trip, and one comes back dead, and the other one comes back insane.
Right? Yeah, yeah. That's definitely supernatural.
It's something, but we talked about that. Crazy stuff happens.
Every day.
In the Appalachian Mountains.
Every day it does.
Every single day.
And if you got a grandma still around, anyone out there in the Appalachians, listen to her stories, because they might not all be that crazy. They might be, you know, in some form of truth, or started in some form of truth.
I mean, we're notorious for embellishment, right? But now, if somebody tells you that something crazy happened in the Appalachians, especially in the woods, like, just believe them. Don't question it.
In the woods, in the hollers, and by the creeks and streams, definitely.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. So that was, I used to have my sister read me that story like once a week because that was my favorite story. And then everybody wonders, you know, why I'm all weird now. But that's what I grew up reading, you know?
Actions have consequences, I guess.
They definitely do. They definitely do. But that is probably what started my whole glitch in the matrix, like time hop, yeah, all that, like, research where I'm just like, I have to know more about this.
Right. It drives you. That search for knowledge.
Well, that and usually caffeine, but yeah.
Well, yeah. That helps too. That helps the drive. Helps you pursue the drive.
100%.
Well, Jesse, this has been really fun. These have been some awesome stories. You got any last things you want to share before we get going?
No, not at the moment. But if you ever have any questions about, you know, crazy stuff in the Appalachians, like, I'm sure that we'll end up talking about it more. And
oh, absolutely. You I'm always down for this.
100% though, I want to go on a road trip to Devil's Hollow now.
Yeah, I kind of want to just see the area because I'm sure the cabin's gone, but I would love to go down that stone road and, you know, hopefully don't end up in a cloud on the way there, fog on the way there. But if it does happen, I'm like, I guess it'd be kind of cool. I just don't want to end up in the middle of a family feud.
Well, I mean, people have, you know, there's all kinds of crazy stuff that's allegedly happened there, probably because of all the courts. So, but I mean, if people have made it back before, we'd probably be good, maybe.
Yeah, I think that's right. Okay, so I want to go to Devil's Hollow. I don't want to go to that grave site with the chain, wherever that allegedly, where that happens.
Carl Pruitt's grave.
Yeah, I don't want to go there.
Actually, you know, I've told you this. I go on, like, ghost road trips sometimes. So we'll just make that a stop, you know. And if I ever go there, I'll just call you and be like, Jay, you have to get down here
to Devil's Hollow, right?
Yeah, to Devil's Hollow. I might even, so that if that grave hadn't been destroyed, I would 100% want to go and see it.
Oh, and screw that, you go there by yourself.
Oh, come on, man, it's just a little ghosty.
Well, then don't bring any chain necklaces, chain anything, chain belts, take the chain off your bike, any sort of chain. Let's just make sure that's not involved whatsoever, and then maybe, perhaps, I'll go there, if that's fine. I think I have
that. I was about to say, it's the spirits. They don't want me to tell you about Devil's Hollow.
They don't want the world to know about this stuff. Well,
they have to know.
They have to know. The secrets, the stories need to be told, and they're getting told right here. We're preserving them forever.
Yeah, I mean, continuing the tradition of oral history.
Right.
But yeah, as long as, just edit it to where I look like I'm kind of smart, and then we'll all be good.
I'll do my best. Everyone out there knows we're professional podcasters. We're really good at editing.
It's good to know.
You did fantastic. This has been really fun. The stories were awesome. I'm sure everyone out there listening enjoyed them. And I think it's time to get going. So we have a tradition on this show. We count down from three and we all say bye into the mic and as the music plays. So are you ready?
Yeah.
All right. One or three, two, one, bye.
Bye.
Hey guys, thank you for listening to Cryptids of the Corn podcast. Remember, the best way to support the show is share it with a friend. But if you are craving more of the Jay clones
and more from Mr. E,
there's always extra content on Patreon
and our paid member space on cryptidsofthecorn.com.
We'll catch you next time with more exciting, fun, and informative information.
Bye!
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
Save big this summer with great deals, all in the Kroger app. Get select varieties of Powerade or Body Armor Super Drinks for 79 cents each. Then get a 2-pound package of strawberries for $2.99 each, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.